in colorful containers. Vines snaked across the roads, bare of leaves where they'd been ripped off by passersby, but budding again as they dug into the sides of buildings and climbed closer to the sun. There were creatures in the plants that Siv didn't quite understand, things flying about that weren't anything like the seabirds and bugs in the skyer. Small and delicate as gems, they buzzed here and there, dipping into the plants and smacking against one another with a pleasing thump before moving on. "What are they?" she asked as they passed near a plant covered with blooms, each one surrounded by the jewel-bright creatures. "Squeeps," the woman said with a brief smile before hardening her expression and returning to silence.
"Why do the starving people not eat them?" Brendel asked.
The woman aimed her blaster at Brendel again and shook her head.
"Is everything you say blasphemous?"
Brendel's eyebrows rose, but he wisely looked away and didn't pursue the conversation further. The sky was almost black now, the wind whipping sand into Siv's eyes under her mask. The air felt electric and uncontrollable, and the streets were empty. Finally, the Gavs reached the building that resembled a Konstar Mining Corporation station, although it looked nothing like the images Siv had seen on the screen at Terpsichore. This structure had been painted in bright pigments and was covered in vines. The sliding doors were open, showing a yawning white hallway that made Siv's skin crawl. Naturally, they drove straight into it. Once within, the driver parked the Gav in a long row with other vehicles likewise decorated to look dangerous, and Siv recognized a room much like the one where they'd found the speeder bikes. A hangar. Each of the Gavs plugged into the wall, and there was a gentle hum of machinery. Brendel, for all his sullenness, had a sharp look about him as he took in the room, and Siv wished she had some idea of what he was thinking. She was pretty sure he was developing a plan. Among the Skyer, plans hadn't been something to keep secret from the warriors. If even one person didn't know what to do in case of emergency, things tended to fall apart. But Brendel was crafty and strange, and once again she was reminded that something about him didn't sit well with her.
"Barely made it,"
the leader crowed, hitting the button that closed the hallway door. The howling of the windstorm stopped, and the room went unnaturally silent.
"Out,"
their captor said, blaster pointed at Brendel as if she didn't even consider Siv a threat. Brendel hopped down, followed first by their captor, then Siv. No matter which way she moved, blasters pointed in her face. After so much time spent on hot, shifting sand, it was strange to stand on the cold, hard floor, and she wobbled for a moment, trying to regain her footing.
"Walk,"
the woman said, nudging Siv in the back with the blaster. That, too, was a new experience. Having grown up with a cache of old, broken blasters in the Nautilus, Siv wasn't accustomed to thinking of the small, blunt, harmless-looking machines as a real threat. But when the woman nudged her again, she moved in the direction indicated. Brendel was already walking, his head turning this way and that, up and down. They were soon joined by the others, and Siv felt a profound sense of relief to be near Torben and Gosta and Phasma again. The stormtroopers fell in step behind Brendel, carrying poor Ellie between them. Siv couldn't tell if the woman was breathing or not. She hung between her fellow troopers, limp and unconscious. Gosta was awake, but still in Torben's arms, and Phasma, clearly dazed from being shocked, was having trouble walking in a straight line. When Torben's arm touched her own, Siv smiled slightly, but she knew where she was needed, so she bumped against him in a telling way and hurried to help Phasma. Now, the Skyer were a people who enjoyed physical touch and comfort, considering that they faced a cold, unpredictable, cruel life. But Phasma had always held herself apart. Siv trusted Phasma with her life and knew she was the most talented strategist and the fiercest fighter on the planet. But that didn't mean Siv was just going to walk up and put an arm around the staggering fighter. Even then, there was an aura around Phasma, almost like an animal's unspoken warning to keep a distance.
"What do you need?"
she asked, walking at Phasma's side and holding out one arm to show it was available to be grasped.
"My helmet and my eyesight," Phasma snapped. "My vision is blurry, and my fingertips are
burnt. Numb. But she didn't take Siv's arm, so Siv let it fall back to her side and merely walked slightly closer to her leader than she normally would, ready to catch her if she fell.
No talking,
one of the captors said, waving one of the electric sticks. He looked like he had a temper, so Siv stopped talking. As soon as they left the hangar and entered a hallway, the station became eerily similar to Terpsichore, with the same smooth white walls and floors and cold, bluish lighting. Siv saw no droids, though, and she did notice some changes in the layout. Wide windows opened on busily working machines, and although they were being marched quickly along, Siv saw that many of the machines appeared to be making or manipulating the bright fabrics everyone in the city wore. She realized they were following a green line on the wall, so she wasn't surprised when the next door their captor opened led to barracks. The room was quite similar to the one at Terpsichore Station, but it held twice as many beds and was occupied by at least 30 people. Most of them were thin to the point of emaciation. That didn't bode well, Siv thought.
Hands out, the leader said.
One by one, he unlocked their binders and shoved his prisoners into the room, all while the man with the sneer and the electric prod blocked the exit.
What about Gosta and Ellie?
Siv asked as soon as she was free. The leader shrugged at her, so she added,
The women who were hurt?
He shrugged.
Not my problem. They'll get better or they won't, as the Aratu wills it.
But what do we do?
Brendel asked as the leader turned to leave.
You do the only thing you can do,
the man said, his eyes twinkling.
You wait for the gods to shine on you and hope you don't die.
Their captors left laughing, and the Skyer and First Order folk were left to deal with an entire room full of strangers, none of whom looked friendly.
Fresh meat,
someone murmured. Despite her injury and the fact that she'd been stripped of her weapons and helmet, Phasma's posture changed, subtly shifting into a fighting stance.
Not for you,
she growled. And then they charged her. 23. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Luckily, it was the Gaunt Ones who attacked. Torben gently placed Gosta on the ground and prepared for the onslaught, and Siv bared her teeth and screamed. The first person who reached Phasma was a man so thin they could see every bone pressing angrily through skin. Phasma didn't wait for him. She headbutted him and threw him aside. Taking her lead, Torben batted their attackers away like they were made of kindling, and they crumpled and rolled across the hard floor, moaning. Siv waded in, fists flying, and discovered the strange sensation of beating people who were too exhausted to fight.
Stop this instantly!
Phasma called as one of the fallen men reached for her from the ground.
Do you have any food?
He asked.
They're still strong,
another one added.
Won't last long,
someone else said, deeper into the room. Brendel and his troopers stood behind the Skyer folk. The troopers had put Ellie down beside Gosta, but Brendel hadn't given them the command to fight, and no one had yet threatened him, so they merely stood, waiting. Now that the other prisoners had stopped attacking, Brendel stepped forward, pushing past Torben to stand at Phasma's side.
Someone explain this place to us.
A short, bearded man in a long-sleeved robe, who still had some muscle about him, hopped off a top bunk and strutted over as if he owned the place.
This is Aratu Station,
he said, his voice dramatically pitched to fill the room.
Once the leading supplier of fabrics, recyclamesh, and tarpaulins for the Konstar Mining Corporation's operations on Parnassus. You know what happened. It all went to hell. And we're what's left behind.
Brendel flicked his fingers at the man.
Get to the point. This is a prison. We know, but what do they want of us? To merely suffer?
Because I suspect something more. The short man crossed his arms and smirked. He wore a draped crimson robe like the soft people outside, The fabric wrinkled and worn, but still vibrant in comparison with anything in the Skyre besides freshly spilled blood.
There are too many people here, he said simply. Not enough food, not enough room. So we serve the Aratu and hope for his favor.
And what does the Aratu ask? Brendel pressed. The man walked to one of the skeletal prisoners on the floor, still creeping toward Phasma, although she'd proven beyond a doubt that it was an idea doomed to fail.
If you're troublesome, he wishes you to suffer in an amusing fashion. If you're interesting, he wishes to be entertained. So I ask you, my drab friend, are you troublesome or entertaining?
Brendel huffed a sigh and glanced around the room as if he'd expected something better.
I am bored. So is the Aratu. So I'd suggest you find a way to be entertaining.
The man kicked the crawling prisoner, who fell over with a listless grunt.
Because the suffering doesn't look so pleasant. Everyone has a chance to earn food and possibly freedom, but the Aratu is picky, and those who don't delight him don't eat. They clear these poor souls out once a week.
He grinned through yellow teeth.
The soup's always extra good that day. I'm Vrod, by the way.
He held up both hands, letting the sleeves of his robes fall down. His left hand was entirely whitish pink, while the rest of him was warm brown.
Vrod of the White Hand, they call me. I'm lucky. I always amuse the Aratu, which is why I'm in charge of this prison full of arena fodder. Your time will come soon. Let us hope you find your own gift quickly.
With that, Vrod turned and walked to the door. When he barked a command, it slid open and he sauntered out. The moment he was gone, the room's original occupants focused once more on the newcomers.
I am General Brendel Hux, Brendel
shouted, loud enough for anyone to hear.
We have no food. It was all stolen by your oppressors. But I warn you now, we are trained warriors. Trouble us, and you will suffer even more than this.
He nodded to one of his troopers, who stepped to the half-dead figure on the floor at Phasma's feet, and pressed his boot down until a loud crunch echoed in the still air. Around the room, heads nodded in understanding and respect. Siv was horrified, both at the prison and that Brendel had encouraged one of his men to murder someone who was already half-dead. Perhaps it was a mercy killing, but the dramatic snap of bones suggested a more sinister intent. Looking at the two troopers now, Siv couldn't even tell which one was responsible for the act. Gosta shouted, and Siv turned to find one of the gaunt men grabbing for the injured girl's hand as she lay on the floor, floundering.
Torben!
Siv motioned for the big warrior to help their friend, and he lunged to kick the man away and swing Gosta back up into his arms.
We need a bed, he noted.
Phasma was still somewhat dazed, and Siv almost spoke for her, but Brendel stepped in.
There.
The bunk beds he pointed at held 5 prisoners, so thin that they could squeeze in 2 up top and 3 on the bottom, even though the cots were made to fit only 1. Siv quickly realized that it would be easy enough to evict these weak prisoners, but particularly cruel. Still, she was a woman of the Skyre, and Gosta and Ellie needed a safe, defendable place. Pete and Huff were already headed toward the bunk, everything about their posture and gait suggesting that the people in the bed should get out before they were forced out, which they did, slithering down to the ground as if they didn't have the energy or strength to stand. Siv felt bad watching them crawl away, but at least Brendel let them live. Torben carefully placed Gosta on the top bunk, and Siv crawled up to sit beside the younger girl. There was an animal comfort in feeling the warmth of a friend's flesh and smelling her familiar smell. Since they'd been in the city, Siv's nose had been tormented by the scent of too many bodies, combined with cloying fragrances, both layered over the sharp bite of the growing vines.
You okay?
Siv asked, as Pete and Huff put Ellie in the bottom bunk.
My head hurts,
and everything feels really bright and loud, but I think I'll do.
Siv grinned at the girl's plucky spirit and elbowed her gently. Good. We don't really need your head anyway. And this place is bright enough, so you're not alone there.
What's going to happen, Siv?
Gosta asked.
What do they want with us?
Siv smoothed her hair back reassuringly. We'll find out soon enough. Until then, rest. You'll need energy for whatever's coming. Gosta agreeably snuggled down. Siv let herself relax just a little, enjoying the bed's padding after the bone-jarring ride in the Gav. Her nausea had stopped, for all that she was ravenously hungry. Nothing could be done about that. She settled down as well, preparing for a quick catnap. Torben was on her other side, standing guard by the bunk, his shoulder even with the bed. He brushed her cheek with huge knuckles before standing up tall and giving the room a withering dare of a glance. Phasma and Brendel stood at the foot of the bunk, whispering in hushed voices. The stormtroopers guarded either side, and Siv had to assume that they were as safe as they were going to get, and she might as well give in to the bone-weary heaviness in her limbs. As Siv drifted off, she noticed the gaunt prisoners edging toward the body the stormtroopers had stepped on, their eyes hollow and glowing and desperate. She closed her eyes and turned away. Using the detraxers was one thing, when everyone grew up knowing their responsibility to the people, alive or dead. There was a dignity to the machine, even the way the needle left the smallest hole, nothing garish or noticeable, really. But here, it seemed, bodies were something more. Siv had been hungry, but never hungry like the people on the floor. She hoped she never had to learn what it felt like. The next day, Vrod appeared in bright blue robes, his long beard braided and dyed purple. When they'd met him yesterday, he'd appeared to be just another prisoner, but it must have been some peculiar game or ploy to test them. Now he seemed like a caricature of a person, with colorful paint around his eyes and stitching on his sleeve that emphasized his white hand. A whisper of worry went up around the room. He looked at his prisoners with a satisfied, anticipatory smile and clapped his hands.
Yesterday's bounty, come along. It's time to meet the Aratu and see what you can do.
Brendel stepped forward.
All of us? One of my people is still injured.
Vrod shrugged.
That's not my problem. You only get one chance to meet the Aratu, so you'd best leave her behind.
They'd removed Ellie's helmet sometime in the night, and when Siv jumped down, she saw that the woman's color wasn't good. She was pale, with purple circles around her eyes and matching blue lips. Phasma leaned in and confirmed what Siv suspected.
Her neck is broken. Even if she wakes, she won't be able to move her legs, maybe even her arms. Brendel thinks she might pull through, but in his world, one grows accustomed to medical miracles.
One more reason to get back to his ship, Siv noted. Phasma nodded.
But we won't get there if we have to drag dead weight.
Standing, Phasma called out to Vrod.
Will you allow us to keep our clothing?
Vrod chuckled.
If your appearance amuses the Aratu, yes.
Brendel and Phasma traded a glance. Whatever passed between them ended with Brendel inclining his head in a nod. Without another word, Phasma began stripping Ellie's body of the white armor. Although Phasma was never clumsy, it was an awkward job. The other two troopers didn't know whether to help or repel her until Brendel sighed.
Fine. Help her.
And now you have until I'm bored,
Vrod said, turning his attention to a mess under a ragged blanket in the corner.
Who drew the short straw last night? Ah, he wasn't very interesting. No great loss. You'd all best hope the new blood is amusing, or you'll be licking bones for dinner.
Every eye settled on Siv and her group, and she felt as if she were being picked apart by knives. These people were beyond loyalty and kindness, reduced to only hunger and desperation. Perhaps Brendel's First Order was the answer he claimed for such folk. If they could take a city this wretched and overcrowded and bring peace. With the stormtrooper's help, Phasma soon had the white armor attached over her regular clothes. The fit was inelegant, as Ellie was a head shorter than Phasma and a bit stockier, but the end result was that their greatest warrior had the best armor ever seen in the Skyre. When Phasma put on the helmet, she gasped briefly.
"You get used to it," Brendel said, as Phasma's helmet turned this way and that.
"What do you see?" Siv asked. Phasma laughed, a rare thing.
"More,"
was all she said, and Siv burned with curiosity to know what it was like to look out through those mysterious black lenses. Phasma had seemed ill at ease ever since she'd lost her old helmet, and now she visibly relaxed, for all that they were headed toward an uncertain fate. But then Siv's eye was drawn to Ellie, and a sad view it was. The woman was limp, one of her feet at an odd angle that had been invisible under the armor. Phasma was right. This was not a person up to the struggle of life in the Skyre, much less a perilous journey across the gray sands. Wearing only the form-fitting black suit and with her bruised, twisted neck revealed by the helmet's removal, Ellie was a small and pathetic sight, her hair roughly chopped and her cheeks marked with old scars. "I don't have the detraxers," Siv said, suddenly overcome with loss. There was a reverence to her job, a certain awe and appreciation the band owed her for what she did. Without the oracle salve and liniment, her people would quickly take burns, weaken, or succumb to minor infection. She'd watched her mother perform this holy ritual when she was a child, and the day her mother had died, having fallen from a rock spire and hit her head while dangling from her line, it had been Siv's responsibility to mount the effort to retrieve her mother's body and the detraxers in her pack. The moment the needle had slipped into her mother's arm, Siv had cried. Tears were infrequent things in a place bereft of water, but she'd caught them in a small vial and added them to her mother's essence, a final act of love. Since then, Phasma and the other warriors had become her family. Being in the presence of a body well on the way to death but missing her tools, Siv couldn't help feeling a knot of failure in her stomach. The dark green stripes had faded on everyone's cheeks, and she could do nothing to help protect her people here.
"Are you ready yet?" Vrod asked. "The Aratu is anxious to meet you."
Brendel and Phasma walked side by side, their warriors falling in behind them. Siv noted that Phasma walked a little prouder with the armor on, although she also admitted that Phasma had always walked proudly. Still, the armor suited her. Torben helped Gosta down from the bunk, and the girl leaned on him, limping in Phasma's wake. As the group walked out the door, Siv heard shuffling footsteps approaching their bunk. She did not look back. There was no helping Ellie now, and the rules were different in this place. And when she thought about it, was it not strange that they'd been in binders and chains yesterday, but now, walking out into the hallway, they had but one leader and no restraints? She understood immediately when she'd passed through the door. Vrod's people waited in the hall, and they had among them two of the gray-skinned dogs on ropes. Just like the skin wolves they'd fought in the desert, these beasts had strange knots and wrinkles and warts all over, and they also had bared teeth and deeply thrumming growls that suggested they'd love nothing more than to have something fun to chase.
"Running would be unwise," Vrod said, stating the obvious. "But if you do decide to run, at least put some panache in it. The dogs crave entertainment, too."
Vrod marched them down several familiar hallways and toward where the turbo lift had been located in Terpsichore Station. Here, however, that hallway ended in tall, broad doors. When Siv wordlessly pointed to the slashes of paint over the doors, Brendel frowned and muttered,
"It says, Welcome to Oblivion. Well, that's cheery."
Vrod planted a hand on each one and shoved hard, flinging them open dramatically. The room within was more cavernous even than the hangar, as big as the rest of the entire factory, it seemed.
It was as tall as 6 men, the walls perfectly straight and solid, and the ceiling so high that the colorful squeeps darted among the struts. When Siv described what filled the room, I had to teach her the right word for it. Arena. Rows and rows of benches surrounded a circular pit with high stone walls and a gray sand floor. Even if she didn't know what to call it, she understood immediately what it was for. Fear trickled down her spine. The Skyre was an unwelcoming place, meaninglessly and randomly cruel, but humans had created this loathsome monstrosity on purpose. Vrad led them through a gate and into the arena. Standing in the center of the ring, it was only natural to spin around, looking up and feeling small. The seats were empty, save for a sort of box nestled among the benches and protected on all sides by elaborate fabric awnings. Within this box sat a throne that dwarfed the one Keldo and Phasma had once shared in the Nautilus. Several older men and women in violet robes sat on benches on either side of the grand chair, chattering excitedly and pointing with their fabric fans, but they were clearly not the focus. On the throne sat a figure swathed in voluminous red robes and wearing a tall, ornate hat. It was a human man, pink and fat as a baby. His mouth was pursed in displeasure, but when he noticed them approaching, he grinned. The tiny, jewel-bright squeeps lined his shoulders and sat on his hat, flickering and resettling restlessly against the vibrant crimson. Now he sat forward avidly, steepling his fingers.
"What is this?"
he asked. Vrad bowed, giving a flourish with his white hand.
"New bounty for your pleasure, my Aratu. Caught yesterday in the Eastern Trap."
"What are they?"
"I wouldn't want to spoil the fun for your majesty."
The Aratu cleared his throat and waved a hand at them.
"Explain your exotic origins."
Brendel stepped forward, and Siv noticed that his manner had changed completely. His movements were bigger, his accent snapping, his voice cultured and deferential and smooth.
"Great Aratu, we are but noble pilgrims passing through your magnificent land."
The Aratu bounced in his seat.
"Yes, but what can you do? The last group of strangers had an alien covered in fur."
Brendel faltered briefly, then bowed.
"I am an educator and strategist for the First Order, Great Aratu, and my talent is for administration and shepherding the young toward strategic ends. If you require intelligent men in your employment, I can assume many roles. I could perhaps help parcel out the resources so that fewer people might starve."
"I don't like him,"
the Aratu said, pouting. He wiggled his fingers at Brendel as if trying to shoo him away, and pivoted in his chair, making the tiny birds erupt and flutter around him.
"Wait! Why does that one,"
he pointed at Phasma,
"look different from those ones?"
He pointed at Pete and Huff.
"There are more fits, but the tall one is funny. Is it a clown?"
Brendel stepped up again and began.
"Oh, great Aratu."
"No, I asked that one, the tall one. What is it?"
Phasma spoke from inside the helmet, her voice flat and half-robotic. Siv wouldn't have recognized this voice, this accent, just a week ago.
"I am Phasma of the Skyre, and I am a warrior. I have taken this armor from a dying soldier, so it was not made to fit me. And if you require skills, my skill is death."
The Aratu sat up, looking fascinated and excited.
"Death?"
"I will fight anyone or anything in return for my freedom."
Later, Siv realized that Phasma had spoken only for herself, not for her people. The Aratu shook his head, his hat waggling.
"That won't do. If you're pleasant to watch as you fight, I want you to stay. I shall require you to have some theatricality about the death you deliver.
So if I do well, I stay. And if I do poorly, I stay.
Well, yes. But if you do well, you'll be fed. And given treats.
But Vrod said we could earn our freedom if we pleased you.
The Aratu glared at Vrod, who took several steps back.
Yes. Well, he was lying. Only I can make the rules.
Phasma nodded, and Siv knew her well enough to understand that she was running a variety of scenarios through her head, trying to select the best angle of attack. The Aratu scanned the rest of their group, but did not bounce in place again.
The rest of you are quite boring. Even your clothes are dull. Can anyone do anything other than fight?
An uncomfortable silence followed. When the Aratu's mad eyes landed on her, Siv felt as if an insect's legs were picking apart her face, hunting for some crevice to cling to.
I can tell stories, Siv said.
The Aratu cocked his head.
Oh? About what?
Life in the Skyre? Our past battles and the stories from my mother's time, which she passed down to me?
His eyes narrowed.
So these are just histories of people like you? That doesn't sound very thrilling.
It's thrilling if you've lived it.
The Aratu snorted in disgust and flapped a beringed hand at them. The birds flapped and resettled as if they too were bored.
Take them away, Vrod. Dress them in something exciting and bring them back tonight.
Brendel had remained silent, but now he spoke again, and his voice held none of the respect or showmanship he'd used earlier.
And what will we do tonight?
He asked. The Aratu grinned like a child who relished pulling the wings off butterflies.
The only thing you can do, apparently. The best thing. Fight.
Vrod led them to another room in the compound and made them undress completely, bathe in sharply scented waters, and put on new clothes he handed out from an endless rack of colorful garments. The style of dressing was entirely different from the Skyre, and Siv couldn't get used to the loose shirt that billowed around her as she walked, and the wide pants that swished with every step. Her years of fighting on rocky, uneven terrain told her immediately that such clothes would only trip her up, catching on obstacles when she most needed agility. She missed her tightly fitted leathers and thick boots, a second skin that could withstand all but the sharpest blade. Even Phasma was given new garments to wear under her stormtrooper armor. As she was prodded into the shower, she kept glancing back at her armor as if suspicious it would be stolen. The Aratu must have indicated that he preferred the costume, though, as it waited unchanged on the bench when they returned. The leathers she'd worn underneath, however, were gone. As they waited for Phasma and the troopers to finish attaching their armor, Torben sidled up to Siv, bumping her shoulder gently. He'd been helping Gosta through the bathing process, as the Skyre folk were more shy about wasting water than about nudity, but the girl was doing fine on her own, arranging her long, curly hair into a thick braid. Turning to face Siv, Torben caressed her stomach with a wide, warm hand.
I noticed in the showers, he said. How do you feel?
Siv smiled. She had been wondering when he would recognize the change in her shape. For a murderous beast of a man, he was tender in many ways, and she had been certain he'd catch on quicker than the others. Good so far.
You should eat more.
I'd like that, too. He paused, hands on his hips, looking away shyly.
Mine?
Siv chuckled. I think you know the answer to that. Yours or Keldo's? Not much privacy in the Skyre. Torben smiled and nodded. She knew he considered those good odds.
Brendel's ship will have things to help you, he said. His medicine.
Swallowing the lump in her throat, Siv looked down. She'd lost two children that she knew of, after she'd begun to show, but before they were fully formed. Fewer and fewer children were kindled in the Skyre, and even fewer than that were born. Ilva had nearly died birthing Frey, who had been a small and frail little thing. Frey was going on 6 now, and still their band's only child under 12. This baby would have been a great boon to the Skyre, but only if she'd been able to bring it to term and survive the bloody fight to bear and deliver it. Selfishly, perhaps, she'd decided that she'd rather have a live child in space than give the Skyre another scant handful of salve and another dry package tucked into the hidden chambers of the Nautilus.
"I hope so," she said.
Gosta appeared, smiling, still squeezing water from her braid. The girl had noticed nothing of Siv's altered form, but then again, as far as Siv knew, Gosta was only 14 and hadn't yet chosen any partners to couple with, or established that she was interested in doing so. Since the girl's mother had been dead many years, perhaps no one had taught her the ways of life, although there was no way to avoid witnessing the act that kindled it. Siv flushed with shame, thinking that she'd been so worried about her own possible child that she'd perhaps neglected this younger girl, already alone in the world. That was another boon to finding Brendel's ship and joining his clan among the stars. Not only fewer lost babies, but fewer lost mothers as well. Brendel appeared, and the tender moment was over. Although Siv desperately wanted access to the safety and resources of his ship and his people, she didn't like the man himself. She liked him even less when Phasma wasn't in the immediate area, as he could be a bully, especially when it came to the needs of his warriors as compared with those of the Skyre. Perhaps it would be different once the Skyre band formally joined his First Order, whatever it was. Perhaps they too would become his people. Siv would gladly pledge her loyalty to Brendel for the promise of medicine like that her ancestors had enjoyed. Magic injections that could cure disease and pain. Knowledgeable droids that could easily guide a mother through her birth with the insurance of a positive outcome. His recovery from the fever at Terpsichore Station had fully convinced Siv that she'd made the right choice. Being around sour, crafty Brendel would be worth it when she held her first child. But until then, she looked to Phasma whenever Brendel was near. The warrior was having trouble adjusting her armor over the excess fabric of her billowing costume. Siv walked over.
"Horrible, isn't it?"
Phasma looked up, her eyes full of ill humor.
"They want us to die and look like magnificent fools doing it."
Brightly striped fabric poofed out between the dusty armor segments, but Siv knew better than to try to help Phasma in any way. With Gosta, she wouldn't hesitate to reach out, tucking here and there and clucking, but Phasma didn't rely on touch like the rest of them. Even Keldo took his comfort, as Siv well knew. Even though he was very private and had rarely spoken of his troubles or feelings, still he had his tender moments, when he pressed his forehead to hers in the quiet darkness of the Nautilus, or whispered secrets that she promised to keep. But not Phasma. She held herself aloof, always, and would be more likely to dart between one of her people and an arrow than to slap someone on the shoulder in a friendly fashion after a victory.
"They want us to die?" Siv said, flashing a grin. "Let's disappoint them, then."
At that, Phasma smiled, and a feral thing it was. Siv hoped never to be on the wrong end of it.
"Yes, let's."
Vrod appeared in the doorway.
"The fine fabric of Aratu blesses your audience."
He flicked the colorful tunic spanning Torben's chest, and Torben growled.
"But a word to the wise. If you wish to fill your empty stomachs, entertain the crowd. Get them on your side, especially the Aratu. Cheers will earn your meat and water."
Gosta shifted closer to Siv, who sensed her dread. The girl was a nimble fighter, swift and silent, an excellent scout, and undetectable under cover of night or when crawling among the rocks. But whatever had happened to her leg during the fall would take time to heal. Her fighting would not be, as Vrod had requested, entertaining. Siv resolved to remain close to her and defend her if need be from anything that might sense her weakness and target her. She wrapped an arm around Gosta to help her walk. They still had no idea what they would be required to fight. Soldiers, the other prisoners, the hideous dogs, or something even more dangerous. And they hadn't been given weapons, or even asked which weapons they favored.
Put on your brightest smiles for the Aratu!
With that, Vrad held out his arm to the door, urging them into the hall. As they walked toward the vast room containing the arena, herded by blasters and skin wolves, they could sense a certain change in the air. Before, all had been still and quiet but for the smooth hum of the air recirculation machines. Now they heard a growing noise, something like the rumble of thunder combined with the gabbling of seabirds and the harsh slap of the angry ocean.
What is it?
Gosta asked.
Aratu, Vrad cheerfully replied.
The person?
The city. Aratu is the city. Aratu is the leader. Aratu is the heart of this place.
What does that mean?
Instead of answering, Vrad whistled an unsettling tune and skipped a little. When he threw open the double doors, the sound and heat hit Siv like a wall of stone. She'd never seen so many bodies packed so tightly together, and the Skyer folk halted in the open doorway, frozen in place. Brendel and his troopers kept walking. They must have been accustomed to large groups of people. But Siv's heart pounded at the energy in the air, the assault on her senses. Thousands of people packed the benches around the arena, hip to hip, a riot of color, sound, and movement as they whistled, yelled, stamped, clapped, and waved colorful flags. A heavy scent rolled over her like the sea, the usual musk of bodies plus heavy perfumes and strange spices that reminded her of the greenery clinging to their walls. Even the heat, so many hearts beating, so much blood, it made her woozy.
What's wrong? Vrad said, urging them forward with his spread arms. The Aratu welcomes you.
It's an awful lot of Aratu,
Torben noted. Phasma looked around in a full circle, her helmet scanning the room.
So be it.
She strode firmly ahead, past Brendel and his men and into the arena. There were no weapons visible, no obstacles, no hiding places. Merely the floor of the arena covered in gray sand. Head up, Phasma walked until she faced the Aratu again.
Well?
She shouted. The Aratu stood, his arms up and lined with preening, glittering birds, and the people went mostly silent, although their whispers still tickled Siv's ears, as if they just didn't have the sort of self-control even small children showed in the Skyer.
My people! We have fighters tonight. Whom shall we have them fight?
The Aratu spoke into a machine that amplified his voice, filling the giant room with his booming words. A murmur of discussion went up in the stands, slowly cohering into a strange word repeated again and again like the call of a raptor. As the chant built and the voices went from whispers to cries, Siv realized that whatever it wasn't good.
Render us! Render us! Render us!
What's a render us?
Torben asked. Siv turned around to ask Vrad, but he was closing the doors with a madman's grin as he backed into the hall. The metal slammed shut, and the bolt drove home. A quick scan showed Siv that there was no way out. The walls rose far higher than even Phasma's head and were made of smooth metal, nothing like the craggy rocks they'd grown up climbing and clinging to like barnacles. With the doors closed, the Skyer folk stayed close together, quickly moving into a clot, backs touching as each person faced outward towards some unknown threat. The troopers recognized the strategic advantage of this grouping in the larger circle of the arena and joined in. Brendel slipped between his men to stand in the center. It was just as well. If there was fighting to be done, someone like Brendel should stay out of the way and let the real warriors handle it. Phasma still stood alone near the Aratu, who was goading the crowd into ever louder cries for Randorus. As if of one mind, the circle of Skyr and First Order fighters moved together to the center of the arena and waited. Siv's heart pounded in time with the crowd's chants, and her hand drifted unthinking to her belly. She felt safe enough with weapons in her hands, confident that she was trained to fight and would die a good death if her time had come. But this situation was unnatural and unsettling in a way that life in the Skyr was not. There was an artificial flavor to the spectacle that she found distasteful. "Just come kill us!" she shouted back at the crowd. No one heard her. The faces she saw were lit by a mad fervor, spittle flying from lips and fists pounding the air. Her gaze landed on an old man with a mustache dyed blue, then on a plump woman dripping in necklaces, next on a cluster of small, starving children throwing rocks that fell far short as they screamed. Their faces made her feel like a cornered animal. But then weren't the people in the stands the ones behaving like animals? When it seemed the raised voices could get no louder, the bodies on the benches parted like waves around a shark's fin to reveal a huge man, even bigger than Torben, casually swaggering down to the arena. He was dressed in the usual colorful pants of the Aratu's people, but wore no shirt, and his pale chest was a riot of scars and tattoos under his thick blonde beard. He carried no weapons, but his hands were wrapped in stained white fabric. As he walked down the stairs through the stands, he slapped hands and punched the air and shouted his own name with the crowd. When he reached the railing at the edge of the arena wall, he leapt over it easily and landed on the soft sand in a dramatic crouch. But Phasma was already running for him, and as he rose and bowed to the crowd with an exaggerated flourish, she landed a flying kick that should have shattered his leg. The crowd roared in disapproval, but Randorus didn't fall down with a snapped bone. He turned slowly and gave Phasma a look that would have made a lesser fighter quake. Gosta, in fact, did quake. Standing so close behind her, Siv could feel the tension in her body, the jerky shake in the girl's arms.
"So that's Randorus," Torben murmured. "He looks like fun."
Cracking his knuckles, he strode away from the circle and toward Phasma and the fight. The troopers and Brendel stayed put, so Siv and Gosta closed the circle, waiting for more fighters to appear. Phasma, however, wasn't waiting. She continued her attack on Randorus, barreling into a combination of punches and kicks that any Skyr warrior would recognize, as she'd taught it to each of them. It involved a sequence of shots to bewilder and shut down the victim, rendering a fair fight less fair. A jab to the throat, a cross to the face, a hook to the ear, a cross to the solar plexus. But instead of doubling over to catch his breath, Randorus punched Phasma's helmet, and her head rocked back in an unsettling way. She shook the hit off and watched him, hunting for a new angle. The helmet must have been built to absorb some damage and protect the skull, or Phasma would have been on the ground already.
"Why are there no weapons?"
Gosta asked, leaning heavily on Siv.
"Be quiet and learn," Siv said. "You know everything I know."
Phasma circled around Randorus, fists up and protecting her head, as Torben came up from the other side.
"I see you, little man," Randorus warned. "And I'll get to you next."
Before he was done talking, Phasma slammed her helmet into the big man's chin, catching him by surprise and making his head rock back in turn. Torben caught Randorus's long hair and yanked him back so Phasma could punch him in the throat, but Randorus caught her fist as easily as if she were a child. Pivoting, Randorus slung Phasma into Torben and they both went down. Phasma had never fought in the armor before, and although it should have helped absorb damage, it also made her less agile. Still, she recovered quickly, rolled off Torben and stood, so perhaps it served its purpose. The moment she was on her feet, Phasma went for a brutal flurry of kicks, but Randorus blocked them all, laughing, then clipped her legs and fell on top of her in the sand. Before Torben could react, Randorus had popped off Phasma's helmet and started to choke her.
"Won't you help them?" Siv muttered to the troopers.
Not until I give the word, Brendel muttered in return.
Siv wanted to help. Her deep-running Skyar loyalty wounded to see her leader laughed at by the crowd. But she was the only person standing between Randorus and Gosta, should it come to that. It was clear that the troopers wouldn't help the girl, not if they still had Brendel to protect. And perhaps Siv would get beaten and choked as well. But at least it would be for the right reason. Torben was up now, and landed a blow to Randorus's spine that made the Aratu man abandon Phasma's beating and leap to his feet with a howl. They circled each other, one big and pale and the other big and dark. The red drained out of Phasma's face, and she shook her head and stood, dazed and planning her next attack. When Torben went for a clinch, Phasma tripped Randorus to help get him to the ground. Torben landed on top of him, straddling Randorus's chest, and the men began to grapple while Phasma rained down blows from above and kicks from the side. Watching the fight, it was clear to Siv that Randorus had different skills than they'd learned in the Skyar. His grappling wasn't just rolling around, aiming for a better position. He was twisting his arms, looking for certain holds, and eventually he found a way to choke Torben unconscious in the crook of his elbow, his face buried in Torben's neck so Phasma's blows couldn't injure him. The moment Torben went limp, Randorus stood and grinned at Phasma.
"You're next," he said. "If the Aratu wishes."
He looked up at the Aratu, one foot on Torben's chest. The Aratu stood and waddled to the railing, the birds fluttering in his wake. He held three pieces of fabric in his soft hands, one red, one green, and one black. Tapping his fingers on his chin, he considered the scarves, then selected one and tossed it out on the sand to the crowd's riotous elation. The cloth was red, and whatever that meant, Randorus laughed. Phasma later told Siv that what Randorus whispered in her ear as the crowd went mad was this.
"He wants to see you beaten, but not killed. Take a few hits, and you'll eat well tonight. But make it look good."
And Phasma also told Siv what she whispered back.
"No."
What occurred next was something Siv had never seen. Never thought she'd see. Randorus pounded Phasma into the dirt. He held her hair and punched her face. He picked her up from the sand and slammed his fist into her chin. With her armor intact, he couldn't beat her body to a pulp, so he took out his measured anger on her face. Phasma struggled and kicked and punched and clawed, but she couldn't defeat Randorus, a man of twice her mass. If she'd had her axe and spear, or even a dagger, then she would have had a chance. But starved, exhausted, unfamiliar with fighting in armor, and utterly without weapons or supporters, Phasma tasted her first defeat. And the Aratu loved it. He laughed and clapped his hands with each fresh punch. When Phasma finally fell, dripping blood in the sand and unable to get up again, the Aratu jumped up and down in delight like he was less a leader and more an overgrown child, and a stupid, cruel one at that. The birds shrieked as they flew circles around his hat. Siv looked around the arena at the cheering, jeering people and felt a surge of pure hatred. It must have been easy to be petty and mean and cruel when you had an excess of people. In the Skyar, lives were so few and so hard to create that death was no laughing matter. This type of barbarous inhumanity was a new thing, and Siv felt an answering fury burn in her own heart. The Aratu and his people, she hoped, would one day pay for what they'd done. At least Phasma wasn't dead. As the people cheered and shouted for Randorus, a hidden door slid open in the wall of the arena, and Randorus picked up the red scarf and walked out, arms up, shouting his own name. The door slid closed the moment he was within, and there was no visible outward mechanism to show how it was accomplished. Far away as it was, even if she'd been willing to leave Gosta behind, Siv couldn't have escaped that way. But at least now they knew there were doors.
"Go get her,"
Brendel said to his men, and the troopers jogged to Phasma and picked her up by her arms, dragging her back to the group and leaving a long, bloody trail in the sand. At the very least, there were no blood beetles. When no further threat presented itself, Siv shoved Gosta at Brendel and muttered, "Help her," before running to Torben. She skidded to a stop in the sand on her knees and shook his shoulder, calling his name. When he didn't answer, she patted his face gently, then slapped it. "Torben!" she shouted in his ear, desperate to wake him up before something else came at them. Finally, his eyes flickered open and focused on her.
"I don't like the way he fights," he said.
Siv smiled.
"Me neither. You should stand. We don't know what's coming next."
He nodded and sat up, and Siv helped him to his feet. Together, with the crowd's jeers pelting down, they hobbled to where the rest of the group waited. A circle reformed with Phasma and Brendel at the center this time. Phasma lay on her side, curled up around her broken face. Noticing that the helmet still lay near the splatters of blood, Siv sprinted to it, picked it up, and returned to her people. Phasma would want it when she woke up. It was hard, once someone had adopted a mask, to give it up, Siv well knew.
"Let's try one more thing,"
the Aratu shouted.
"Shall we release the Lupulcus?"
He pointed to the arena wall, and another door slid up. Two gray shapes burst out of it, loping easily into the arena as if they were well accustomed to it. It was the hairless gray skin wolves again, grotesquely moist and covered in warts and boils. These two seemed larger, thicker, and meaner than the wild ones. They quickly focused on the fighters and increased their speed, teeth bared as they ran across the gray sand. If she'd had a weapon, Siv wouldn't have found the creatures threatening at all. 2 against 7 were good odds, even for creatures that were harder than most to kill. But without her blaster or blades, and considering that Torben was still only half awake, she was not quite sure if she could stop these beasts unarmed. Wary but determined, she stepped in front of Gosta. Phasma groaned and held out her hands.
"My helmet," she muttered.
Gosta kicked it to her, and Phasma shoved it over her head. The moment the helmet was in place, Phasma was on her feet at Siv's side, the stormtroopers joining them to make a wall of 4 people.
"You okay?"
Siv asked Phasma. In response, Phasma tensed into a fighting stance and shoved Siv backward. Siv landed in the sand and rolled back to standing in time to watch the first skin dog leap at Phasma. The Skyr leader's white-plated arm went up, the dog's teeth closing around it. With her free arm, Phasma chopped the back of the dog's neck and it crumpled to the ground, where she put a boot on its neck and stomped. The other dog lunged at the stormtroopers, who did their best to fend it off.
"Stop playing,"
Phasma said, striding between them and holding out her arm to the beast. The moment it latched onto the armor, she slammed a gloved fist into its skull, and it too went down. She stood, looked directly at the Aratu, put a foot on the beast's head, and waited. Siv knew she should have felt pride and satisfaction to see her leader not only live through the beating she'd received, but also take down the attacking dogs. But she couldn't help finding something blasphemous about the wanton killing. Even these ugly creatures could have provided water, nutrients, and meat. Instead, they were strewn across the sand, their value ignored, and by a people without enough resources to feed their poorest members. The arena went silent but for the muted whispers of the people in the stands. Every eye went to the Aratu. He stood, his head cocked, considering, but he did look pleased. He raised his arms into the air, and the little birds swirled around him, chittering happily.
"That was wonderful,"
he said.
"Take them away and bring me something new to watch. Bring them back tomorrow for more fun."
A cheer went up, and the words soon coalesced into the demand for something new, something new. The door they'd entered through earlier reopened, and Vrod appeared, motioning them along, his warriors waiting with their blasters ready.
"Bring the wolves,"
Phasma said. Siv was too busy helping Gosta and pulling Torben to follow the command, but the two stormtroopers immediately turned to pick up the limp bodies of the gray beasts. Siv noted that Brendel's face went through some fascinating contortions, from indignation to anger to fascination to measured consideration, seeing his men follow Phasma's orders. Vrod didn't argue as they stepped through the door.